The Christian State of Life, or Sermons on the Principal Duties of Christians in General and of Different States in Particular, by Father Francis Hunault. On the Usefulness of Almsgiving for the Temporal Welfare of Parents and Children, preached on the 6th Sunday after Pentecost. From whence can anyone fill them here with bread in the wilderness? St. Mark chapter 8, verse 4. Introduction. Such a great crowd of hungry people, there were 4,000 of them, how could they be fed? And in the wilderness, too, where there was nothing but thorns and brambles. We have only 7 loaves, and they are hardly enough for ourselves. How is it possible to satisfy so many people with such a small quantity? Thus did the disciples speak to Christ. We are nearly in the same position, my dear brethren. We are bound by the divine and natural law to help the poor and needy with alms. How can we help them all? Is the question that some ask. There are such numbers of poor nowadays. And so none of them are helped. The question of others is, who can give alms in the desert? That is, in such bad times that one has enough to do to provide for himself. And thus the times become very hard indeed for the poor and needy. Who can give alms? Is a question of most, especially married people. I have only 7 loaves, that is, I have barely enough and have a large family to support. My income is hardly enough to support us decently, so that I am bound to economize, and thus very little Christian mercy is shown to the poor, or it is not shown as generously as it should be. That is a clear sign of a want of faith and confidence in the providence, power, and goodness of God, as if He, who can produce so much from an insignificant seed that is put into the ground, could not or would not make rich compensation for what is given to the poor. The disciples of Christ, who were then men of little faith, saw that He had power so to multiply the 7 loaves that when they were distributed among the hungry crowd, there still remained more than there originally were. That is, as St. Augustine says, a symbol of the faithfulness of alms. Christ wished to teach us thereby that almsgiving does not lessen, but increases our wealth. And that is what I shall now explain in order to refute the excuses already mentioned that people bring forward, and especially the last one. If you have many children and a small income, yet you can, and even must, give generous alms to the poor, for thereby your worldly possessions will be increased in this life. That is the whole subject of today's exhortation. Blessed Virgin Mary, Mother of God, thou wast especially the mother of the poor, while on earth, for at the wedding of the poor people in Cana of Galilee, thou sayest to thy son, they have no wine. There are many of whom it could now be said with truth, they have no bread. Thou canst intercede for these by moving all here present to do the work of Christian mercy. May thy Son grant us that grace through thy intercession and the holy angel's guardian. A father of a family keeps his rye and wheat in the barn and does not plant them in his land. His servant comes and tells him that it is time to sow the seed. No, says the other, I will not sow. I have too large a family. My income is hardly enough to support them decently. The times are bad. I must keep what corn I have, or I may have none at all by and by. What? The servant, who is far more sensible than his master, says, what do you mean? Have you lost your senses? That is the very reason that you should sow the seed more abundantly, if you wish to support yourself and your family. The more children you have, the more crops you want, and in return for the one grain of corn that you put into the ground, You will have 50, 60, or even more at harvest time. If you had no seed at all left, you should even buy some so as to be able to sow and to prevent your land from lying idle at such a loss to yourself. A merchant gives up his business because he has a large family and he wishes to keep his money. You tell him there are many rich people who are willing to borrow from him at 5% interest and to give him security worth 10 times the money advanced to them. But he is not to be moved. He sticks to his former resolution and says, I will keep my money to support myself and my children, and I will leave them what is over after my death. Otherwise, I might lose all and become poor. But you would say to him, have you lost your wits? What is the good of allowing your money to lie idle in your coffers? It will grow less every day and never increase. Lend it at interest, and it will bring in more for you every year. Invest it if you want to make anything for yourself and your children. For in 20 years you will receive the whole value of your capital and interest alone, and your heirs can receive 5% for it after your death. What is your opinion, my dear brethren, of these two people? Do you think they act for the best interest of their children? But you must form the same opinion of those who are hard and stingy towards the poor, on the pretext that they want their money and bread for their children and their families. What is an alms given to the poor? It is the seed, as St. Paul tells us, that is cast into fruitful ground and brings in 100-fold. He that meaneth seed to the sower, are his words in the 9th chapter of the 2nd epistle to the Corinthians, in which he exhorts them to be generous to the poor. Give cheerfully, and do not be afraid that you will be the losers. For he that meanereth seed to the sower, that he may sow it, will both give you bread to eat, and he will multiply your seed, and increase the growth of the fruits of your justice, that being rich in all things you may abound. What is an alms? It is money lent at interest, nay, even a divine interest, which returns not 5 for 100, but 100 for 5. He that hath mercy on the poor lendeth to the Lord. And to what Lord? To someone in this world? Oh, that would be too dangerous. Fearing the best are not always to be trusted. How often do we not hear of people who imagine that their money is as safe as if under lock and key, when they have a receipt signed in presence of witnesses by those to whom they lend it, and yet they find themselves deceived afterwards and wait in vain for payment? And yet, in spite of all these dangers, people are so eager for gain that they do not hesitate to lend their money. There is another Lord, however, with whom money may be invested in the shape of alms, with the most complete security. You must not imagine, O Christian, when a ragged, hungry man begs at your door for a piece of bread for God's sake, or when a blind or crippled man piteously implores your help as you are going along the street, or when those poor people who are ashamed to beg ask assistance of you through others. You must not imagine, I say, that these are the people to whom you can lend your food, your clothing, your money at interest. Oh, certainly, if you hope for a temporal return from them, you would be disappointed. You would invest your money very badly indeed. You would not recover the interest, much less the capital. No, Christian hears. But although you cannot hope to get any return from the beggar, the blind man, or the poor citizen, do not, therefore, be afraid to entrust your money to him. It is the great Almighty God, the owner of all things, who comes to you in the person of the beggar and the poor man. It is God who takes the alms from you as a capital borrowed at interest, nay, at usurious interest. Could you find a richer, safer, or more faithful Lord to whom to lend it? Could you have the least fear of being at a loss through him? Can anyone be richer than he, of whom God says that he is his debtor, says St. Zeno? Do you, perhaps, doubt that? Certainly you do not see the person of God marked on the poor man's forehead, but hear what the Lord himself says in the Gospel of St. Matthew, and says, too, in the clearest and most empathetic manner. Amen, I say to you, as long as you did it to one of these my least brethren, you did it to me. And what you refused them, you refused me. St. John Chrysostom says, Christ is in want when you see a poor person. It is Christ who is hungry and thirsty, who is a beggar and naked. He stretches out his hand for an alms, and even if you give him only a penny, a piece of dry bread, or a drop of cold water, he will not refuse it, but will receive it with gratitude. Jesus Christ, says St. Augustine, cries out at our door, give an alms for God's sake to this poor man, I will take it from you by his hand. I do not ask for you as much as I have given you. I have shed every drop of my blood for you, and all I ask of you in return is to give a drink of water to my brethren when they are thirsty. I give you my body as your food, and I will be satisfied with a piece of bread from you when my brethren are hungry. I have freed you from the prison of hell, and now I ask you to visit and console me when my brethren are in prison. I have saved you from death and given you life. Do you in return visit me when my brethren are sick, etc. Such are the words of St. Augustine. What more testimony of man do you require in support of this truth? Do you not yet believe it? Then I appeal to the judgment of God himself. For what else but that truth will be heard there, both by the good and the wicked? I was hungry, will Christ say. I was thirsty. I was naked, etc. St. Peter Kosologist exclaimed with astonishment, how powerful with God is the love of the poor, or rather, the pleasure he has in almsgiving. God rejoices in heaven when a poor man receives a piece of bread on earth, although the poor man is filled with shame at receiving it. I am not surprised now that there were kings and queens and emperors and empresses who visited on foot the poorest of the sick, fed, washed, and attended to them with their own hands, and served them even on bended knees as servants wait upon their masters. Nor am I astonished that many other persons of high position were not ashamed to walk publicly through the streets, carrying in their hands a napkin containing food and drink from their own table that they were bringing to the sick poor. Nay, that they were not ashamed to beg for the poor from door to door. My dear brethren, if we had only a little real faith, if we could only see, as they did, what a great Lord is concealed under the persons of the poor, we should not wonder at all this. And who amongst you, if he saw, as many holy people did, Christ himself standing at the door begging for alms, would not look upon it as the greatest honor and happiness to give him what he would ask for? He would even share the last piece of bread, the last penny in the house with his Redeemer. Nor would he allow a servant to do it. He would run at once to the door himself, and bareheaded, and with the greatest respect, would give his alms to Christ, as is the laudable custom with many pious Christians when giving charity. Is there one amongst you who could send Christ away from his door with the customary, God help you, under the pretext that he cannot afford to give alms, or that he wants all he has for himself? I do not think any Christian could be so hard-hearted. And yet, our faith assures us that Christ comes in the person of the poor, and that he receives whatever is given to them. Who, then, should not joyfully embrace every occasion of giving alms that presents itself. Oh, my dear Savior, if I had no other reason for being generous to thy poor servants but the great happiness of giving thee pleasure thereby, if I could hope for no other honor but that which thou wouldst bestow on me by deigning to take anything out of my hands, certainly I should joyfully suffer hunger and thirst in order to help thee with food and drink and the necessity thou hast taken on thyself. And do I not owe thee all that I have, all that I am, or can be? But to return to my subject, thou dost not ask me to help thee for nothing. Thou takest nothing from me as a gift, but as a loan, and at interest, that thou mayest give me something far better and greater in return. Thou actest with us as a father with his child. If he sees that the little one has an unripe apple in his hand, he says, "Give me that apple, my child, and I will give you 3 much nicer ones for it." In the same way, thou, O Lord, askest, nay, implorest, a little from us, that thou mayest be able to repay us for it 30, 20, 100-fold in this life and in the next. And to make us sure of the great gain thou hast promised to us, thou hast given us thy own written word, the infallible scriptures, as a testimony. Listen now, ye of little faith, who are hard and stingy to the poor, through fear of being at a loss by them. The wise man already quoted says, "He that hath mercy to the poor lendeth to the Lord, and he will repay him. He that is inclined to mercy shall be blessed, for of his bread he hath given to the poor. He that giveth to the poor shall not want." There were men of mercy whose godly deeds have not failed. Good things continue with their seed. Their posterity are a holy inheritance, and their children, for their sakes, remain forever. Their seed and their glory shall not be forsaken. Their bodies are buried in peace, and their name liveth unto generation and generation. Let the people show forth their wisdom, and the church declare their praise. Honor the Lord with thy substance, and thy barn shall be filled with abundance, and thy presses shall run over with wine. Give, and it shall be given to you. What shall be given to you? Good measure, and pressed down, and shaken together, and running over, shall they give into your bosom. Can any promise be plainer or more certain than this? These are the words of the Almighty, infallible, and faithful God. Can we doubt that they will be fulfilled, or fear that we shall be at a loss by giving alms? If in addition to all this, I were to bring forward the testimony of the holy fathers and doctors of the church to prove that God has promised great rewards even in this life to those who give alms generously, I should not finish my sermon today. They are hardly ever more eloquent than when they speak of this subject. Sometimes, with St. Augustine, they call almsgiving a profitable barter by which we get gold for lead. "Do you wish to make a profit?" he asks. "I will give you good advice. Learn how to traffic with Christ by means of the poor." St. John Chrysostom calls it a lottery in which there are no banks, and in which 100 pieces of gold may be drawn by giving 1 piece. The same saint tells us that it is the very best way to grow rich. St. Clement of Alexandria calls it the breasts of the church, which, although they flow daily, yet daily receive new substances so that they may continue flowing and they never dry up until they cease to give to others. But I need not go any further, for we have experience itself before our eyes to convince us, if we only wish to learn from it. Tell me, my dear brethren, have you ever heard anyone complaining of being poor or of having greater difficulty in providing for his children on account of almsgiving? Go through the whole world, ask, if you can, all the poor, what is the cause of their poverty? Do you think you will find a single one who has been reduced to poverty through practicing the works of mercy? You will find illustrious houses decayed, respectable families ruined, those who inherited great wealth now begging their bread. But I need not tell you why. We have cases like that now and then occurring before our eyes, through excessive gambling, through gluttony and drunkenness, through unnecessary feasting, through pomp and luxury, through idleness and laziness. These and similar things are the tools that make the beggar stab. Nay, many a one is reduced to poverty by the very means that he used with a view of enriching himself. But I never heard of anyone becoming poor through almsgiving. Show me a single instance in which a prudent man can complain that he has been deceived in this respect. Show me, if you can, children who have been impoverished by the charities of their parent. On the contrary, I can tell you of numberless cases in which temporal goods have been increased even miraculously and without the possessor's knowledge in the hands of those who gave charity to the poor. Do you wish to hear of miracles? I venture to say that at all times, almost, and in all places, miracles have happened on account of generous almsgiving. Read the lives of the saints. You will find instances enough in which they, after having given away all they had to the poor, have sometimes found their barns full of corn, their cellars full of wine, and in other times their coffers full of money, although they knew that a short time before they had neither corn, wine, nor money. Metaphatris writes of St. Gregory the Great that, while he was still at the abbey of a monastery in Rome, a stranger came to him one day, and in a piteous voice told him how he had lost everything by shipwreck, and had nothing left but debts to pay, so that he was in danger of being imprisoned to the great disgrace of his family. Gregory, moved with compassion, told the cellarer to give him 6 Roman crowns of gold. A few hours after, the man returned and begged more earnestly than before for further help. The abbot, who can never refuse a poor man anything, gave him another 6 crowns. A short time after, on the same day, the same man came back a third time and asked for more. Is it not true, my dear brethren, that many would have lost patience at the man's persistence? But the charitable Gregory spoke to him in tones full of compassion. My good friend, said he, I do not know if there is any more money in the house, but I will ask, and if there is any left, you shall have it. Whereupon he called the cellarer again, and the latter told him that there was no more to be had. Is there nothing that you can sell? Asked the holy man. Nothing but a silver dish, was the answer, and that does not belong to our monastery, but to the lady in Rome who left it with us. Then, in God's name, said the abbot, give the man that dish, and I will arrange matters with the lady. When Gregory afterwards became pope, he used to invite 12 poor people to the table with himself every day. He one day found 13 guests, although he knew that he had not invited that number. At the end of the meal, he asked the 13th, in a friendly voice, how he came there uninvited. I am he, answered the disguised beggar, to whom some years ago, when you were abbot, you gave 12 crowns in gold and a silver dish. I was then only testing your generosity. I am your angel guardian, and you must know now that in regard to your generosity, God has raised you to the highest earthly dignity, the papal throne, and has placed so much wealth at your disposal, you can always have enough to give to the poor. You will see yourself, afterwards, the treasure you thus laid up in heaven. Thereupon, the angel disappeared. Ribadian area tells us in the life of St. Germanus, Bishop of Antios Doro, that when he once met some beggars on a journey, he told his deacon to share amongst them all the money he had left, which consisted of 3 ducats. The deacon, not wishing to give it all away, kept 1 piece back and divided the other 2 amongst the beggars. On the same evening, Germanus received 200 ducats as a present. "See," he said to the deacon, "let this be a warning to you to lay aside your avarice and to put your trust in God. You have not done faithfully what I told you to do today. If you had kept back nothing, we should now be 100 ducats richer and should have received 300 instead of 2. Poncianus tells us of the noble named Zonzinus, who was very generous towards those who tried to conceal their poverty and used to support their families by sending alms to them through different channels that they did not know who their benefactor was. His steward told him that he ought to moderate his charity somewhat, as he had spent something like 2,000 ducats in that way in a few years. "Listen," said Zonzinus to him, "give away what I tell you, and let me look out for myself. I know well that I shall not be left short. I keep an account book in which I write down every day whatever I give to God in the person of his poor, and also what I receive from him in return. When I try to balance my accounts, I find that I am always in debt to him. What I receive is always greater than what I give away. If we ever become even, or if I receive less from him, then I will think of moderating my charities." In the same way, Idocus, who was descended from royal blood, but who became poor for Christ, experienced the wonderful effects of almsgiving. He, as Baronius writes, lived in solitude on the banks of a river with his companion, Womar. He never refused to help the poor, if he was able to do so. One day there was nothing left for both of them but a single loaf of bread. He divided it into 4 parts, and gave 1 of them to a hungry beggar. The poor man, after having eaten his share, came back a 2nd, 3rd, and 4th time, until he had eaten the whole loaf. Womar began, therefore, to complain meekly that their whole meal was thus taken from them, and they had no chance of getting any more bread. "Be of good heart," said Idocus to him. "Remember that the divine generosity is not yet exhausted. He who can feed the sparrows and the ravens will not forget us. Trust in him. I assure you that God will either give us food, or he will not permit us to suffer hunger, because we are without it." The event proved his words to be true, for immediately 2 boats, guided by an invisible hand, came up the river laden with bread, and stopped opposite to where the 2 companions were. Iodocus took the bread with grateful heart, and he and his companion gave thanks to divine providence that had thus so richly repaid them for what they had given to the poor. I cannot refrain, my dear brethren, from relating another very interesting example that St. Peter Damian tells of a poor but pious workman. He had only a very little money left with which he intended to buy something good to eat, as he had had nothing but dry bread for a long time. A beggar came to his door and asked for charity for God's sake, just as he was thinking what he ought to buy. The poor man then got into a great state of anxiety and did not know what to do. He thought it very hard to refuse the beggar, and harder still to deny himself the little indulgence he was looking forward to. But charity got the upper hand of him at last, and like the widow in the gospel who gave her mite, he bestowed all the money he had on the beggar, so that he had nothing for dinner but dry bread. A short time afterwards, a servant, who was utterly unknown to him, came running up, bathed in perspiration, to his house, carrying in a napkin 40 times as much money as he had given to the beggar. "This," said the servant, "was sent you by my master. I must hurry away, as he is waiting for me." The man, full of joy and astonishment, wished to inquire the master's name, but the servant had already disappeared. So true is the proverb, almsgiving never brings poverty. He that hath mercy on the poor lendeth to the Lord. Yes, you think, my dear brethren, but these are miraculous things that happen only to holy people. But I say there are miracles that occur almost daily, as they who are constantly charitable to the poor experience, for they are blessed in a special, although natural manner. For instance, they get a legacy that they never dreamt of. They gain a lawsuit that they had almost despaired of. Their business prospers, or they are freed from losses and misfortunes. They recover lost goods, or get back what was taken from them unjustly, and so, in different ways that they hardly notice, God rewards them for their charity to the poor. Thus their money comes back to them, as a general rule, with interest, when they lend it to God in the persons of the poor. I myself know a man who used to give his porter $20 or $30 every month to give to the poor, saying to him at the same time, "See whether that money will not bring us in more than we lose by giving it." And certainly, frequently during the month, his prophecy turned out true, so that he came to the porter and said to him, "Do you remember what I told you? Here is payment of a debt of some $100 that I had given up as lost. A hailstorm had destroyed all the crops except mine. See what the $30 given to the poor have done for us." Yes, my dear brethren, I repeat, almsgiving is the most profitable business of all. Nor can it be otherwise. Our God is most faithful, and the promises he makes on this head are plain enough, even if that were not the case. He is most noble and generous, and will not allow any man to outdo him in generosity. If you do not like to believe me, try it yourself. Engage in that business for a time, with a lively confidence that God will repay you with interest. "Try me," says the Lord by the prophet Malachias, exhorting the people to pay tithes to his temple. "Try me in this," saith the Lord, "if I open not unto you the floodgates of heaven, and pour you out a blessing even to abundance. But if you do not wish to try it, and if you reject my proposal, through fear that you and yours might suffer loss thereby and be brought to poverty, then I tell you, in the name and on the infallible authority of God himself, that you can find no more certain means of incurring the danger you dread, that is, of suffering losses and poverty, than by being hard-hearted or niggardly towards the poor. He that giveth to the poor shall not want. He that despises his entreaty shall suffer indigence." Read the History of the Church by Metaphritus and others. There you will see how a ship laden with grain sank to the bottom at the very moment that the rich lady who owned it refused an alms to a poor man. How 11 ships laden with rich merchandise were wrecked at the moment that their owner refused to give a medal to a poor man. How the devil, in the form of an ox, ate up all the corn and the granaries of another who had done nothing to help the poor in time of scarcity. Benedict Fernando, a celebrated Spanish theologian, says, "I have seen many children of rich and miserly parents who inherited ample patrimonies reduced to such misery in a short time that they had not a servant nor even a piece of bread. And on the other hand, I have seen many who were charitable to the poor go richer every day, and their children have enjoyed abundant wealth and honors." Sometimes people wonder and complain that with all their labor and trouble, they cannot get on, that they fail in business, and suffer losses and misfortunes. How does that happen? I could easily discover the cause of it with some. I should ask them, "Are you generous to the poor?" "Oh," they say, "how can we give much? We want all we have for ourselves." See, that is the reason of it all. When people are niggardly towards God and refuse to give a penny to a poor man, they lose elsewhere, through the hidden decrees of the Almighty, $20 or $30 or more. A laughable incident occurs to me that falls in aptly enough with our subject. A certain man in Tervez lost at cards one afternoon $100. He came home quite crestfallen, and as he was leaning out the window, brooding over his ill luck, he saw his wife at the door, bargaining with a man for some lettuce. After much higgling, she succeeded in knocking a penny off the price. The man saw the ridiculous side of the thing at once and called out to her, "There you are, bargaining all that time for a penny. You have to bargain a long time before you save the $100 I have lost today." We might say the same to those who, for the sake of a little economy, or through fear of some small loss, turn away the poor from their doors. Save your penny if you wish, but you will have to save a good deal before you bring in what you lose by an unsuccessful lawsuit, by an insolvent debtor, by misfortune in business. And so it must be with you. As long as you are niggardly with God, from whom all blessings come, He will be as sparing with you as you are with Him. There can be no luck nor grace where the poor are sent away empty-handed. He that despises his entreaty shall suffer indigence. What becomes of your excuse now, Christian parents? You say, "I have a large family and a small income, and I cannot give alms generously." "What?" says St. Cyprian. "Have you many children? Then you are in all the greater need of prosperity and temporal wealth and blessings in order to support and provide for them. Is it not so? Therefore, invest a part of what you have so that it may bring you in good interest. You do that sometimes, in spite of your large family, with men who can deceive you. Do you think that God is not able to repay you if you give your money to Him in the persons of His poor? Does He, who is the Creator and Lord of all things, who has so often and so solemnly promised to reward you 100-fold for your charity and generosity, enjoy less credit with you than a mere mortal? Could you place a better guardian and father over your children than the Almighty God? Do you think that He cannot or will not protect you and yours, although He protects the ravens and the sparrows that reap not? What doubting thoughts are these? Give to God generously in the persons of His poor. Make over to Him the poverty that you are keeping for your heirs. Let Him be the guardian and protector of your children. The inheritance that is protected by God is in safety. That is the way to provide for your children's future. Have you 2 children? Then, according to St. Augustine's advice, adopt Jesus Christ as the 3rd and feed Him at your table. What an honor it will be for you to be the foster father of the Son of God, to whom you owe everything. What a happiness for your children to have Jesus Christ as their companion and to be His brothers and sisters by a new title. Have you 5 or 6 children so that you can with difficulty provide for them? Even if another came, would you abandon it? No, you would do your very best to support it as well as the others. Let Christ, then, be that inner child when He comes to you in the persons of the poor. Do not turn Him away. Give Him to eat and drink as if He were really amongst the number of your children. St. Augustine says, "Amongst the children that they have on earth, let them reckon one brother whom they have in heaven. It is not necessary for you to give all you have to the poor and to keep nothing for yourself, but let Christ have his share. That is the way to provide for your children's future. Only try it. I assure you, nay, God assures you, that neither you nor yours will suffer any loss by it. The saying still remains true. Almsgiving never brings poverty. It is the most profitable business of all. Ah, my dear brethren, I am ashamed to think that I must exhort Christians to be charitable to the poor by such a wretched motive as temporal gain. As if I wish to make almsgiving a sort of money-making trade. Our thoughts must rise far higher. If everything in the world were lost to us, the eternal reward of heaven ought to be more than enough for us. But I will treat of this matter especially on next Sunday. I have begun with the less important so that the more important point might make more impression on you. And now I conclude with a beautiful, oft-quoted exhortation that the elder Tobias made on his deathbed to his son. Turn not away thy face from any poor person, and the face of the Lord shall not be turned away from thee. According to thy ability, be merciful. If you have much, give abundantly. If you have little, take care, even so, to bestow willingly a little. For thus thou storest up to thyself a good reward, in this world and in the next, which I wish you, my dear brethren, from my heart. Amen.